Today is March 7th, 2018, and this is episode number 452 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and on paper, I'm an aeronautical engineer. You see what I did there, Jeff?
I see what you did.
You see what I did there? To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at Facebook. I think you screwed me up. You changed the wording on this. Anyway, facebook.com/group/context machine
Okay.
Is where you want to be.
The awesome thing about that, Brian.
Yes.
It's been like a month since I changed that.
Really?
Yeah. And you just noticed.
Can't really be expected to pay attention to these things.
Well, no, it's, I mean, this is all still new to us.
Speaking of, by the way, our Facebook group.
Yes.
John Nicholson asked if anyone else missed As the Apple Turns, and I have to raise my hand.
I enjoy it As the Apple Turns.
Yeah.
Those are some fun articles.
Do you remember the cartoon that they ran for a little while? They ran a comic strip for a little while.
I don't remember. I bet if you showed me one, it would click, but no, I don't remember.
As the Apple Turns comic strip. It was a brilliant comic strip. Yeah, I'm not finding it though. Yeah, it was a brilliant comic strip. It was absolutely brilliant, and unfortunately it was short-lived, but it was brilliant.
If anyone has links to any of the comic strips they did, send them my way. I would love to go check them out, see if I remember any of them.
Yeah, as the Apple Tree, it was a good site. It was fun. It was
As the Apple Tree like was it. Great. There was what was the other one that did the kind of satirical Apple news? Was that John Maltz that did that? I can hear all of our listeners yelling the name of what it was at me right now, but I'm sorry, the glass in the studio is soundproof, so I can't hear it.
Yeah, I don't remember what you're talking about.
There's people out there that do.
And right, and we are apparently top men.
Top men.
So join us over there at Facebook, chime in, yell, suggest, chat. I mean, like, I like the fact that, I mean, that John Nicholson posted that to Facebook and had nothing to do with anything else that we were talking about. And you know, I love it. Good stuff.
Well, it fits in perfectly with us because we often talk about things that have nothing or no relation to anything else we're discussing.
That's true. Speaking of which.
Uh-huh.
I only remember one of our topics. We put together three topics ahead of time. But believe it or not, folks, we do actually plan these shows ahead of time.
It's crazy. We actually do. And I just realized why John Keat announces all of your topics at the beginning of Pop.0. It's because he knows you don't remember them.
Oh, I usually write them down. Are you kidding? I've been writing them down. I write them down for John too. This particular week, I didn't write them down because I was actually posting that story on one of the topics, which is, of course, Power Up 3.0, paper airplane motors. Woohoo!
I guess I know where we're starting today.
that's the first topic. But what are the other two topics? There was MoviePass.
There's MoviePass.
And I'm going to pass on that.
I see what you did there.
And then what was the third one?
The whole voice assistant discussion.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
There was that one. Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with the fun stuff, though.
Well, I think that's a great idea because you are so wound up and excited about Power Up.
I am. So what this is, and I want you to take notes, folks. Follow along at home. This is a motorized propeller for paper airplanes. So you can make a paper airplane and you can put a motorized propeller on it and you can fly that sucker.
And remote control it from your iPhone.
From your iPhone or Android device, you know, whatever. It uses the tilt controls, right? So, you know, you want to go make your paper plane go down. You go, well, how does it do that, by the way? You played with an earlier version of this. The current version is PowerUp 3.0. And years ago, you actually got one for a young person in your life.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I bought it as a gift, and they loved it. So mine was probably 2.0. But it looked...
Well, you bought it years ago. It could have been 1.0.
No, I know it wasn't. I don't know. Anyhow, I have had an earlier version of this as a gift that I gave to a young person in my life who loved it. And so the way it worked was we folded up an airplane, and then we took the motor part, which sort of looks like a dragonfly, I guess, without wings on the sides. So you have the little computer part in the nose, and that's where the Bluetooth receiver transmitter thing is. And then it has this long, thin shaft that goes to what will be the back of your airplane. That's where the propeller is. And then it has a little fin so that you can kind of control the flight pattern.
Yeah, that's the question I have. I mean, obviously the ailerons on your paper airplane aren't moving.
Right. But
so how is it controlling up and down and left or right?
That's all built into the tail. So it has...
Does the tail move?
Yeah.
Besides the propeller?
Besides the propeller, yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
So, you...
'Cause I'm just seeing a propeller.
Now look closer.
Oh, I see. Yeah, but I'm still not seeing up and down. How does up and down work?
I don't know. It just kind of did.
Okay, well, that's just even cooler.
Yeah.
Listen, I know the drones are awesome and can do like really cool things like hover. That's cool. I love drones. I totally love drones. Drones are fun. I've had a lot of fun with drones. I'm not bagging on drones, but we're talking about paper airplanes here. Paper airplanes, you can make your own. Like, you get a drone and you have a drone. You can make it. You get it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? With this and
drones, but I know that's not the point.
That's totally not the point. And don't harsh on my...
I'm not going to harsh your mellow.
This, you can make a paper, and it comes with a couple of templates, you know, like, because you need someone to tell you how to make a paper airplane. But I mean, but you can make a paper airplane, you can put a motor on it, and you can fly it. That's cool.
It's really cool.
Freaking cool.
So my advice from experience is the really thin like typing paper or really cheap computer paper. Don't use that. You want something that's a little more substantial, you know, like a little bit of a heavier weight paper. It doesn't have to be cardstock. That'd be like too heavy. But
yeah, it's very clear that the paper that they actually include with the basic kit is a heavier paper, not cardstock, but a heavier paper.
Yeah. It's but it was cool. I mean, you turn it on and the little blade starts going and you just like give it a light little push as you toss it away. And then you're just tilting your phone around and
flying your paper airplane. So I loved making paper airplanes when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And loved learning new recipes, you know, new patterns.
Uh-huh.
For, you know, new designs. And I remember thinking how cool it would be way back then if you could somehow attach a motor to one of these things. I was just thinking that would just be so be the coolest thing ever. But of course, you know, it was impossible at the time.
Did you not ever do the thing where you put a little rubber band propeller on a paper airplane?
Yeah, for sure. And also the balsa wood gliders.
I was always so disappointed with the balsa wood gliders.
Yeah, I would always be excited about getting one, and then would be disappointed with actually having it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would build it, and it would just, I mean, they never balanced right, and they Mm-mm. just, yeah, you'd Mm-mm. fly
but,
it.
But I would mess with them until I could get them to balance right.
I very quickly switched back to paper airplanes.
Well, I liked both. And when I saw this, I actually saw this as a case of an Instagram ad gone right? Because that's how I saw it. It was a sponsored post on Instagram. And Instagram always makes it bizarrely difficult to actually get any information from one of their sponsored posts.
Isn't that weird?
For instance, you can only share a sponsored post to your followers. You can't copy the link to a sponsored post to share it with someone who's not a follower, or to, you know, to post it elsewhere.
Well, then
which is like infuriating to me as a user. And I think completely counterproductive if I was an advertiser.
You know, I've never done anything with an ad in Instagram.
Well, they apparently target well, because you saw that Lord of the Rings shirt that I bought?
Yeah.
I got that because of, I didn't see that particular shirt in a sponsored ad, but, and I'll tell you folks, so let me describe this. It has the tree, the elven tree in the middle, and it's got a ring of Angerthaws and a ring of Tingwar and a ring of Kenya writing. And it says, "All those who wonder are not lost," which is a Gandalf quote. And I got this thing because I was really concerned that not everybody would instantly recognize me as a nerd when they saw me. And I felt like I needed to correct that.
Well, I'm glad you found a way to correct that. Nicely done.
No one will not realize that I'm a nerd when I'm walking around in that hoodie. But anyway, I got that from because another design from the same company was a sponsored post, but it was actually a pain in the butt to find it.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's ridiculous is what it is. So anyway, Instagram posts, both effective and well-targeted sometimes, but also like not designed well. And you can't like copy paste text usually from most of the ads.
That's so weird. All right. So
I mean, why does Instagram make it so hard for you to grab a URL in a post? You can't tap on it and you can't copy it. I mean, you can, if you're looking at it on a Mac or PC, because if you're doing it in a browser,
right.
But you can't from the app. Have you ever noticed that?
No, but that's because I never tap on any apps in Instagram. I'm actually going through my Instagram feed right now. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating. It's all TV shows and movies. And then an ad for Hydro Flask.
You're looking specifically at your ads?
Yeah, I'm just scrolling through to see what ads are showing up.
Mm.
Funny that it includes Hydro Flask. I am so not a Hydro Flask user. I am Polar Bottle all the way.
I had an Instagram sponsored post for MoviePass. Which I'm gonna call that a huge fail. It's because I was actually it's because Facebook is tracking you everywhere, right?
Right.
And I had gone to the MoviePass site to research the article slamming MoviePass, which we're going to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And so Instagram showed me an advert for MoviePass, which is some money not well spent on MoviePass's part.
That's very funny.
Yeah. So anyway, they're, you know, not always well targeted, but sometimes well targeted. That's where I saw Power Up 3.0. And I was just instantly excited about it. I was able to grab the name, because the ad actually did go to a web page that again came up within Instagram, but I was able to copy paste some text from that and went and found it this morning, wrote it up for TMO. And here we are talking about it. And I just think this is the coolest thing ever.
It is really cool. I love it. And I enjoyed the one that I bought as a gift, and the young person that I bought it for loved it too. So, you know, that's really cool. And when you get yours and play with it, you're going to enjoy it.
Fantastic.
So
fantastic.
I have an ad for Lego in my Instagram feed. Okay.
Okay. That seems well targeted.
Yeah. So movies and TV shows, that seems fairly well targeted. The Lego one, that's well targeted. Hydro Flask is actually well targeted too, even though I won't use their products. I do not like Hydro Flask. Polar Bottle all the way. Woohoo. you can't actually do anything. Like, I tap on the ad, and it doesn't take me to Lego's website or...
Yeah, exactly.
And so I just see this thing, and now I have to proactively go to a web browser and type in something to find... Yeah.
Useless. And this also includes the things where they're selling something, and it'll be, you can only buy it through the sponsored post itself. There's no way to get to any external website to do any additional research or do anything else. So, you know, and again,
how would you do that? You have to go look,
you have to go search.
That is so stupid.
But it is not well designed, in my opinion, at all. From a user interface standpoint.
Well, the Lego ads reminding me how much I lament that I never bought the VW camper van kit when it came out.
Yeah.
It's a really, really well designed Lego kit.
Cool story, bro.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be building my Lego kit while you're flying your remote control paper.
Yeah, fair enough. We can both be little boys together. Just in, you know, playing with separate toys. Speaking of cool stories, by the way, a little side note, a 131-year-old message in a bottle was recently found on an Australian beach.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I hope it said something more than send help.
I didn't actually get to what it said on the story.
Well, you know,
should we include that in the show notes?
Yeah.
Include that in the show notes. It was from a German ship. I think it's super cool. And it didn't have a lid on it, and the message was wet. So I'm guessing it was a good thing it was found when it was found.
Yeah. I wonder if at one point there had been a lid and it just rotted away.
Well, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay. I'm with you now.
Like whatever either washed it ashore or uncovered it from having been washed on the shore before earlier, took the lid away too.
Well, this is cool. It has information about when and where it was dropped in 1886.
Yeah, it was the ship's captain that dropped it.
That's really cool. Can you imagine if it was possible to find out that 131 years after you tossed a bottle in the ocean, someone found it?
Yeah. And they did handwriting analysis to the captain of the Paula, which was a German ship, and the message, and confirmed that it was the captain who had written it.
Wow. Oh, I love how this woman dealt with the fact that it was wet. She put it in her oven to dry it out.
Yeah, I'm not sure she turned the oven on.
I bet she did.
I'm hoping she didn't. She might have, though.
I mean, why put it in the oven to dry? Why not put it in the cabinet to dry?
I wouldn't.
Or the bread box.
I wouldn't put an old piece of paper in an oven.
Well, she probably didn't realize at the time how old it was.
That is probably true. I'm thinking that the entire thing ended up as best as it possibly could have.
Yeah.
Anyway, so another cool story, bro. And we'll have that link in the show notes as well. And right. Topic two. What were the other topics again?
Movie Pass and voice assistants.
Take your pick. I picked the first one. You pick this one.
Let's talk about Movie Pass for a little while.
All right. Screw Movie Pass. Next.
All right. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine.
These punks. Well, to tell us what MoviePass does. You were about to sign on to it, so I'm guessing you know.
I've actually been thinking about signing up for MoviePass for quite a while. So it's like a discount subscription service for going to see movies. So theaters that participate in MoviePass, and there are a lot. What you do is you pay your monthly fee, or the smart way to do it, if you're trying to save money, pay for the whole year. It's like $105 for the year. And now you have unlimited movies. You just go into the app and pick the movie you want to see, the time, your seat, everything, just like you would if you're using, say, Fandango. Mm-hmm. And then you're set. And when you get to the theater, you show them something. It's like a barcode or something in the app.
QR code.
And yeah, and then that gets your ticket printed and you go see the movie. So if you see movies a lot, a service like this can save you a ton of money because, you know, going to the movies isn't cheap. So I'd been thinking, you know, this might be a cool thing to do because there's enough movies that I want to see that I skip because I just don't want to spend the extra money. But I'm going to spend at least as much seeing movies throughout the year. So there you go. And so I was actually at the point where I was thinking, all right, I'm going to go ahead and sign up. And then this whole MoviePass news broke and changed my mind.
Right. So that enters what came up this week because MoviePass CEO Mitch Lowe was at the Entertainment Finance Forum doing a presentation, an on-stage interview, basically. This was on March 2nd, I guess, so last week. Mm-hmm. And there, he, according to TechCrunch, and I don't know, that was MediaPlay News that actually first reported the interview. TechCrunch honed in on the aspect of the interview where Mitch Lowe was bragging about the fact that his app is tracking you where you drive before and after you go to the theater and bragging about how much they know about you and talking about sort of intrusive, you're the product kind of thing that I regularly whine about on the show.
So from what I understand, since they know when you're going to go to the movie at some point in time before you would be heading that way, they start tracking you. So they know if you've left from home or somewhere else, if you stopped at a restaurant along the way, whatever you did. And then they know what you do after you leave the theater. So,
right. Like for instance, do you take your girlfriend home or do you go and pick up your wife?
Decisions.
I am not advocating cheating here. That's not my point. But I mean,
well, what if it's a relationship where it's more open and they all know, and so
right. Well, in which case they probably don't mind this company right. spying on them.
Well, they might still not like that. But you know, the logistics of do you drop your girlfriend off or go pick up your wife? That whole dynamic can change a lot if you have an open relationship.
It can. That difference between what you should do and what you can do, right? Like tech execs do not understand that.
Oh, okay. We're back on MoviePass now, not on
yes.
relationships. Got it. Okay.
We're not on relationships right now. So here's the quote. So this is interesting. MediaPlay News. First reported the interview where it was actually more talking about MoviePass from a finance standpoint. Mm-hmm. And TechCrunch caught the bit about tracking you, and so then MediaPlay News said, since that's the aspect of this that has been picked up and spread far and wide, we're including more of the quote, which is very smart of them. They yeah. didn't have the full quote before. So here's the full quote from CEO Mitch Lowe of MoviePass. Quote, "We get an enormous amount of information. Since we mail you the card, we know your home address, of course. We know the makeup of that household, the kids, the age groups, the income. It's all based on where you live. It's not that we ask that. You can extrapolate that. Then, because you were being tracked in your GPS by the phone, our patent basically turns on and off our payment system by hooking that card to the device ID of your phone. So we watch how you drive from home to the movies. We watch where you go afterwards. And so we know the movies you watch. We know all about you. We don't sell that data. What we do use that data. What we do is we use that data to market film." So they're claiming they don't sell it. at least for now. Right. But they're collecting that data. And if they have that data, it'll eventually get sold. Either the company will be bought and then the terms, you know, terms and services will change or whatever. But here's the deal. They didn't even own up to all the stuff that Mitch Lowe was bragging about. They're the like tracking where you drive, for instance, their terms of service specifically say they don't do that.
Yeah. So it's gone from this is uncomfortable to it's totally inappropriate because they weren't even telling people they were doing this. And then it gets on stage and brags about it.
Yeah. Well, which is honestly probably more of a disconnect. I'm not going to accuse them of deliberately obfuscating this and lying about it. I would imagine it's the terms didn't get updated to keep track of with what they're actually doing. Could be wrong. I don't know.
It's possible. I mean, we don't know if this is what they have always done.
Yeah.
And if it's what they've always done, okay, then their terms of service were inaccurate from the beginning. I don't get,
Uber was doing this. Uber was tracking where you went after you got dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
What the frick business is it of theirs? Where the hell I go after I'm dropped off?
And with Uber, they knew the way they were doing this was completely against Apple's terms for developers. Well,
they were doing fingerprinting, and that's separate.
Yeah, but they were intentionally not doing it on Apple employees.
That was the fingerprinting.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yes.
Yeah. And that's separate from them tracking you 5 minutes after you left your, right. After you got out of an Uber ride. I mean, like what business is it of theirs? Where the hell I go? What business is it of MoviePass? Where I'm coming from or where I go to after the movie? And I have an answer. None. It's none of their business.
Well, from their
they have no business tracking this stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So I completely agree with you. And that said, I'm guessing that the reason they feel this is okay and valuable is because the data that they're collecting about our movie watching habits is going to be much more inclusive. So then they can better target you. Like, do you like to go dinner and then a movie? Do you do movies and then you go out and do something else afterwards? That probably can play into how they market different movies and different times to you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Nonetheless, holy crap, this is really creepy and totally inappropriate.
Yes.
So guess what? I'm not signing up for MoviePass.
Yay! I'm not. I'm certainly not. And not installing that app, and I'm not signing up for it.
You know, at this point, if they said, okay, we're sorry, we're not doing that, I'm still not signing up because they have
they said they weren't doing it before.
My trust.
Yeah. They already said they weren't doing it.
Yeah. I could have saved a lot of money, but that's not worth the intrusive tracking that they do.
Nope, it is not. And I'm sick of this stuff. I'm sick of this stuff. And, you know, it's so much of it is our fault. So many of us want free services, quote unquote, free services. And we trade our privacy for quote unquote free. And
well,
I don't like it.
I think part of the problem there is that a lot of people, they really don't understand what they're giving up. And if they had a better understanding of what they were giving up and what the ramifications of giving up that personal information involve, they might be less inclined.
I'm not sure that's the case, man. I think that
I would like to think it's the case.
I would like to think it's the case, yeah. Especially I think young people, I really don't think they care. And, you know, all they care is free. or, you know, quote unquote free.
Sadly, I think you're right. There's a substantial portion of the population that just really doesn't care, and they have no issues or qualms with giving up just intensely private information about themselves.
Yeah. And listen, going back to MoviePass, if they have this information, it'll eventually be sold. Sold, traded, given away, whatever.
Stolen.
I mean, stolen. Yeah, there you go. Stolen. A company like that is meant to be bought in the first place. And when it's bought, new caretakers are going to have other ideas about what, as a matter of fact, have that data may be one of the reasons why the company could be purchased.
Yeah. Yep. I could see where there would be a lot of value in that for some company, advertising company, marketing company.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So it looks like neither of us are trading our privacy for cheap movie tickets.
No, I'm certainly not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm disappointed because, I mean, $107 for all the movies I can watch for a whole year. I mean, that's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, I'm not very good at going to movies. Currently, I'm not very good at getting around to it. But I know that you see a lot of movies, so that would have been a really good deal for you.
Yeah.
Well, let me rephrase that. Assuming you don't mind being tracked everywhere.
Yeah, it appeared to be a really good deal.
It appeared. There we go.
But it would cost me a lot more than $105 a year. Yeah. All right. Well, so we're both out.
You know, as always, interested in hearing from you folks. I imagine at this point, the only people who listen to our show are people who agree with us on this particular issue, because we talk about it all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Sometimes it's nice to hear someone else talk about the things that are concerning you, because then you can sit back and get some validation and be like,
I wonder if, like, I mean, do you have a problem being tracked where you drove before and after a movie because of the service? Is that a thing? Like, yeah. Not you.
Oh, I don't know what you think. You meant the collective you. You meant our audience.
Yes, I meant our audience.
Oh, well, you were making eye contact, so.
Sorry about that. So I would really like to hear from our readers on this. You know, am I making mountains out of molehills again, or is this a thing?
To me, it's a thing.
To me, it's a thing.
Yeah. You don't need to apologize for making eye contact. Your eyes are dreamy.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, and I think we had a third topic.
We do. This is the one that it's voice assistant stuff. So I'll give the setup, because that's kind of what led us down the path to decide this was going to be a topic today.
Okay.
Okay, so a few days ago, I was thinking about how you can get those apps for your iPhone that do kind of like relaxing noises to help you sleep, so you can play Rainstorms and stuff like that.
Yep. And did you see today's deal, by the way?
No, I haven't looked at today's deal yet.
Today's deal at the Mac Observer, and I haven't tested this. I don't know. Maybe you know something about it. And
oh, Piz. Yeah, I know about this. Okay.
Does it work?
Yeah, it does.
They're doing they're generating psychoacoustic sounds that are supposed to help you sleep.
I think it works. I didn't use it for very long. And not because I didn't like it. It's just one of those things that I tried for a little bit and then just kind of,
it's kind of how you roll.
Yeah. I'm kind of transient with stuff like this. So, but anyhow, I thought, you know, you can get these apps for your iPhone, but I've got a HomePod, I've got an Amazon Echo, and I've got a Google Home in my place, because I want to make sure if I'm being tracked, that I'm being tracked all the way. I said that part just for you, Brian.
Yes.
I actually have them because the Echo has worked great for me for a long time, and I love having a HomePod, and I figured I should have a Google Assistant device so that I can do comparisons. Yeah. So anyhow, I thought, wouldn't it be cool, since I have these devices, if I could just have them play that ambient rain sound for sleeping?
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Instead of your iPhone.
Instead of my iPhone.
Should sound better.
Right.
Yeah. For instance, Adam was telling us yesterday in the towers, Adam Christensen of Madcast fame. Mm-hmm. He was telling us how he was playing the Beatles' Blackbird.
Okay.
And he thought that he had birds in his house because the noise was being cast in a way that it didn't sound like it was even coming from his HomePod. Plus, he said he'd never noticed the bird sounds in that song.
Seriously?
Yeah, that part's weird because it's kind of prominent and prevalent.
Yes.
But that's just nitpicking, I suppose. Anyway, so ambient noises going through your large speaker devices as opposed to your phone, that could certainly be better. So,
right. So what please. I did was, excuse me, I gave the same command to all three of the devices with the appropriate trigger prefix, of course.
Just to test. Because science.
Right. So, okay. So I said, hey, S lady, I want to hear a rainstorm. And my HomePod says, okay. And I have this tranquil rain with the occasional distant thunder sound. And so I was like, okay, that worked really well. So then I turned to the Echo and I said, hey, lady, I want to hear a rainstorm. Same thing. Tranquil rain and the occasional thunder thing. And then I said, okay, G lady, I want to hear a rainstorm. No idea at all what I was trying to get, and wanted to play some music playlist that didn't relate to rain really. It was just completely out of left field what it was trying to do. So I thought, okay, it didn't understand me. So I tried again. Okay, G lady, I want to hear a rainstorm. Same thing. So after the third time, I decided, okay, it's not me, it's you. And I had to accept that Google Assistant was completely incapable of parsing what I wanted and giving me the sort of thing that I was looking for. Now, if it had been something where you needed to have a Google Play account, you know, the paid Google Play account,
there's a paid Google Play account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, like you can get all this extra music.
A streaming service.
Yeah.
Yeah. From Google instead. Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Duh. Got it.
Yeah. So if that had been what the problem was, I would have gotten a response saying that I need to have a Google Play account. And I know this because I've tested with all different kinds of music to see what happens. And if there's any type of recording that it can't handle, then it tells you, no, you need to have your Google Play account. That didn't happen in this case. It tried to come up with a music playlist for me. So the first thing that I figured out was, hey, I can actually use the two smart speaker devices that I rely on all the time to do this one thing that I didn't realize I could. It would just play a rainstorm and relax to it. And then it also reminded me that even though we have all these preconceived notions about which of the voice assistant platforms is the best. They all still kind of suck. And I'm always surprised at which one doesn't do something for me.
Okay.
When the other two will. So,
in this case, not
play a rainstorm.
That's not the thing that you said that turned this into a topic for the show.
What did I say that turned it into a topic?
What you said that turned it into a topic for the show was that from your testing so far, and despite popular written opinion, that you thought that Siri was the smarter home assistant.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And I really believe that.
And what can you explain?
Okay. So the deal is, when I'm looking at these for how smart they are, I'm basing it on how well can they parse what I'm saying when I'm just saying what I want. And Siri seems to be much more adept at picking out from normal language or normal conversation what it is that I'm trying to do.
Okay, well, yeah, that actually should be the case.
Mm-hmm.
And where that gets not balanced but pitted against is what the different home assistants are capable of doing when you the user has been properly trained with the proper trigger words.
Right.
And that's where the other two platforms outperforms HomePod and Siri.
Right. And so, and I think Amazon actually is the best at this. Amazon has done an amazing job of training us what words to use and doing so in a way where we don't realize we just had to learn a nomenclature, a syntax for talking to our devices. Actually, this is a conversation Dave and I had during CES, as I recall. But the thing is, with the Echo, with the A-Lady platform, we have all been trained so well how to interact with it that we think that by stringing together the words in the exact way that a lady needs to hear them, that we're interacting with a smarter device. And I don't believe we are.
Yeah, that's not, we're not. I mean, it's the difference between understanding and rote learning. It's the difference between understanding and aping.
Mm-hmm.
And from the difference is here's the thing about this, Jeff. While it's all fine and dandy to argue the academic question of which is smarter, when it comes to practical use, and more specifically a practical effect on somebody's life, the academics don't mean much. Like, it doesn't matter if Siri is smarter if Alexa can do more.
That's a really good point.
And this is, you know, it's the kind of thing where Apple could theoretically catch up someday. No, let me rephrase this. It's a situation where Apple's long haul approach should yield the best results given enough time. Yes. And the question is, how much time is that?
That's hard to say, because
it is hard to say.
All of these are evolving in different ways.
Yeah. And especially with Google is also working on proper AI. Amazon may also be working on proper AI. We don't know. I'd actually kind of be surprised if Amazon was. My biases for Amazon is that they're just, you know, they're perpetually taking the shortcut on everything. You know, they're always looking for the cheapest way into whatever it is they want to do.
Is it taking a shortcut to develop an amazingly efficient text to or excuse me, speech to text recognition system, because I feel like that's what they've done. And so,
done well, text to speech.
Yeah. If they speech to text,
speech to text. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, actually, probably text to speech the other way around, right?
No, because you're saying something; it's converting it into the command. Yeah, but
she's saying something from probably text,
but
and
that's
turning
not
that into speech.
But that's not the part that I'm talking about, because that part's easier. The taking what you say and being able to get the sounds right to turn those into text, which become the commands that their system recognizes. That's the harder part.
Do you know if that was developed in house by Amazon, or are they licensing it like everybody else was?
I'm assuming they're licensing it, but I don't know.
I don't know either.
Cause that's a pretty hefty, project.
Yeah. That's definitely some heavy lifting. So you were saying though, is it taking the shortcut to do that? And I would say yes. And it is still a shortcut, because it's not understanding the difference between understanding and recognizing keyword triggers. In my layman's view, the difficulty level between those two tasks are you know, exponential, or you know, orders of magnitude, or whatever the correct term is. I mean, much, much, much harder to teach a computer to understand what we're saying as opposed to recognizing trigger keywords.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right. So I had forgotten, I think a month ago, I wrote a note to myself, and I just found it. And it's called Jeff's Rules for Interacting with Voice Assistants.
Okay.
So the way I wrote it, I am going to change one word, and the word will now be stuff. When I went to know stuff, I talked to Google. When I went to do stuff, I talked to Alexa. And when I went to play stuff, I talked to Siri.
Huh.
Siri, stop.
That's interesting, because I would say that the first two are the more important two.
Yeah.
And know stuff and doing stuff to me has a potentially bigger impact than just playing music.
Yes.
But you still think that Siri is the smart, and don't get me wrong. Everything that we know and everything that I personally have experienced, I agree with you that Siri is the smarter when it comes to actually understanding, human speech. The problem is she just can't do all that much with that information.
Yeah. And I think that my rules might be different had I been able to do everything that I wanted with S Lady when I first got an Echo. And I invested so much into making my smart home system voice controllable, and the only way to do it at the time.
Can I rephrase the way you word that? You spent so much time making your smart home Alexa friendly.
Yeah. All right. I'll accept that. And the reason I spent so much time doing it was because making it S Lady friendly was not really an option. And that's
right.
Because there were devices that I just couldn't get to integrate with HomeKit correctly or at all, and to be able to have the total control that I wanted, I had to choose a platform, and that platform was A Lady.
I would think that that's changing now, especially with HomePod.
It is changing now. And yeah, I mean, there were two things that I had to accomplish based on what I wanted. And the first was that I needed to be able to control everything from a single voice platform. And the second was I needed to be able to talk to the air, taking my phone out of my pocket, raising my wrist to my face. Those were not part of my master plan.
Yeah, and that's bogus. That's just a bogus way of controlling your smart home.
Yeah. So
I've been cranky about that for quite a while now.
Mm-hmm. And I'm totally with you. It just seemed so stupid to me that to have this control over my home, I had to basically turn my home into an accessory for my iPhone.
Yeah.
And that just, as you were fond of saying, that something that I did not have any truck with. I know totally butchered that up, but that was on purpose.
Yeah, you ain't got no truck with that. Please, let's, if you're going to use the colloquialism, please use it correctly.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, man.
Mostly pedantic. Of course, you know, one can actually go into a mostly pedantic rant about how the incredibly bad grammar of that particular colloquialism is, but I have loved that colloquialism for a long time. I ain't got no truck with that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love
it when you say it.
We want to speak to the air.
Yeah. And
when it comes to controlling our home, we want to talk to our home, not to our wrist, not to our hand.
And now that I have the flexibility of being able to use any of the platforms to do things, I find it fascinating what I choose to use and when. And I'm finding that oftentimes I will jump back and forth between A lady and S lady while performing a series of commands, because you know you can't do compound commands. I can't say A lady, turn on the office lights 50% red. You know, like if I want to have night vision. Mm. I have to tell her each of the things separately.
Yeah.
And so.
But you could do that with, with Siri, though. You sure?
Yeah. I haven't tried it yesterday just to make sure.
Okay. Well, now, because apparently I'm from Missouri, I'm going to try this. Hey, Siri, turn the lights on 50% red.
Action is not.
All right, she showed me.
You just got schooled by an AI.
Yeah, so hey Siri, turn on the lights 50%. Hey Siri, turn on the lights 50%.
And this is exactly why I do not want my parents trying to do any smart home stuff.
Okay, funny enough, by the way, my Apple Watch insisted on picking that up because I had my wrist tilted towards me.
Yep.
Yeah. So, LOL, funny, but she said that she can't turn on my lights 50% at all. What am I doing? Hey, Siri, turn the lights to 50%. No, she can't do 50%. Why is that? Could have sworn my lights did that.
I have found, excuse me, that I have to, no matter what platform I'm using, offer up my commands individually. I cannot do any sort of combo.
Yeah, but I'm not able to do that one at all. That's embarrassing, Siri. Hey, Siri, that's embarrassing.
Hey, Siri, set the office light to 50%. Oh, well, she just did that for me. So what just happened was my office light turned on to 50% brightness with the same light setting that it used the last time I had it on, which means that my office now has red light in it.
Hey, Siri, set the lights to 50%. No, she still can't do that. I don't know why. I could have sworn I'd done that before.
All right, well.
Anyway, hey, Siri, still embarrassing.
See, now she's just giving you the cold shoulder.
Yeah, and funny enough, my Apple Watch is insisting on grabbing all these. I actually had my hand over my Apple Watch, and it still grabbed it.
And listeners, I am so sorry about all the light changes we just had in your house.
Hey, Siri, turn the lights red. Yeah, that's working.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Siri, turn the lights to 50%.
And right now we're all sitting in red rooms. So,
Roxanne.
Yeah. So we can play like we're all in a spaceship or a submarine. Red alert, everyone. Red alert. Or, battle stations.
Or a police video.
Or a police video.
Right. So here's what I'm going to take away from this discussion and these live on the air sausage making experiments. Mm-hmm. We are still far from voice assistants being true AI.
Oh, we are so far from that. We are in what I would consider almost an embryonic state with voice
assistants. Yeah, we're in, I don't even think we're in pre-K. Like if you're going to look at the development of AI school metaphor, your primary school, junior high school, college, graduate school, and then PhD level, right? Mm-hmm. For the sake, let's just go with that. I don't even think we're in pre-K yet.
Oh no, not at all. We haven't even hit early toddler phase. Mm-mm.
We have a long, long way to go. And this is where we come back to the theoretical topic of discussion. And that's Apple's approach versus the other company's approach.
Yeah.
And in that we are in it so early, who's going to get to a really, really useful flavor stage of this first?
Yeah. And
we talk a lot about Apple's long play, and Google is doing the keyword triggers too. Mm-hmm. But we know that Google is also working on proper AI. I don't know that Amazon is.
Amazon may not need to. If their system advances to the point where there are enough trigger words that it starts to feel like natural conversation, it doesn't matter if it's AI.
Yeah, especially, I can actually even refine that, Jeff.
Okay.
Especially if they're never positioning it outside of that. Right? If they always keep Alexa sort of, pinned into an area where you never expect it to do anything more than recognize those keywords, those trigger keywords, keyword triggers, then it's probably not going to matter. Whereas Apple and Google both really need for their AIs to get further. Like they need to take their AIs to the point where we can have conversations with them.
Yes, they do. And it'll be interesting to see which company gets us there first.
I suspect it will be, I suspect it'll be Google or Apple. Could be Microsoft. I know that Microsoft hasn't even been a part of this conversation, but Microsoft is working on this.
I know there's some people that like Cortana, but I feel like Cortana doesn't get to play in the game yet.
Not yet, but we know that Microsoft is working on this stuff, and IBM is probably working on stuff too.
Mm-hmm. But sure, that seems reasonable.
Perhaps a different context, but Watson is pretty darn cool and capable.
Watson is amazing.
Right, and that's playing in this space too, sort of. So I don't think it'll be Amazon that's there first, despite the fact that the Amazon essentially hit the market first with Alexa.
Amazon could be the dominant player in this space without being a true AI.
Nope. You know what? I'm going to predict this. I'm going to predict this right here and right now.
Okay.
Apple and Google both, separately or together, same time, I mean, can take over the market for proper voice assistant as opposed to the apery that, that Alexa does. Even coming much later in the game, if what they're doing is sufficiently advanced.
All right, I'll accept that.
And I think Amazon will probably be the dominant player in the dumb apery. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think that Google and Apple both are going to end up with platforms that are significantly more capable than what Amazon can do.
Yes. And it will be interesting to see if what they come up with is enough to get people to say, all right, I guess I really don't need a lady anymore. And the thing that has me wondering just how this is really going to play out, because I'm with you. I think Apple and Google are going to come up with true usable conversation AI, and Amazon just won't be there. But VHS went out over Betamax, and Betamax was far superior.
Yeah, but you know what though? That analogy doesn't work. And I know that we're technically out of time, but that's a really good point, because the Betamax VHS fight was won and lost over licensing. And it was a different market, it was different kind of competition, and it was essentially different rules. Capabilities are actually going to matter in the AI space. Amazon may well have a long footprint here.
I believe they will.
That would be it, but I think that in terms of computers that we can interact with, I think that they're going to lose to both Google and Apple in the long run. But that doesn't mean that they won't still have a footprint in this space that they're already in. I guess put another way. What's your name?
Name tag. Jeff.
Jeff, right. Put another way, I think that the computers that we can have a conversation with are a much bigger market than the current quote unquote voice assistant market. How do you like that?
I like that.
I heard it here first.
You totally did. You also heard my three rules for interacting with voice assistants here first.
Yes, I did. You should write that up.
Yeah, I will write that up.
And should write that up and then talk about like how it happened and also how it's evolved since then and what it might actually mean. I think that would be a really good thought process for people to enjoy.
And if nothing else, now everyone knows my three rules.
Yes.
And they seem to entertain you because as I was reading through them, I did hear you chuckling. That's only because I said stuff, isn't it?
That helped. Yes.
Yeah. You knew what I actually wrote.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I think we all did.
That's probably a pretty safe bet. All right. Well, should we wrap up?
Yeah, I think so. That turned into a much different conversation than I thought it would.
It did. And I'm okay with that because it was fun.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks for joining us, everybody. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And we love every single one of you. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And thanks for listening.
Indeed, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Hey, Siri, turn off the office light.